And the reason I have the diversity from these different environments was because I needed to make a paycheck. It wasn't because I was like, oh, I liked theater and I was like, let's see if I can go do theater and like this or that. It's more of the fact that I needed a paycheck so that I really wanted to go. And, when TV season was done shooting,
Yeah.
I needed to find more work. So
Right.
I would try and find a film. And if I couldn't get onto film, I would do a live events in the summer. So it more and festivals. So it just became like this ebb and flow of like, all right, I'm gonna go work with this crew so I can make money for this month. I'm gonna go to that crew so I can make money for that month. That's really what it was born out of. In December, I was the guest on an episode of the Heuristics podcast hosted by Kobi Ben-Melech. Heuristics is about how humans interact with technology. For the full, unedited episode of that Heuristics podcast, click on the link in the description. The next few episodes of The Business of Entertainment will be a mini-series of clips from the recording I did with Kobi, but will feature additional commentary at the beginning and at the end of each of these episodes. In this episode specifically, I'm going to discuss a few different topics. I start with the difficulties of working and traveling shows with 360-degree lighting, and I'll eventually get into the need of making a paycheck in between filming seasons and TV seasons. And at the end, I'll round out this episode with ARRI equipment and virtual or volumetric stages and how commercials have been pushing the boundaries of making new content. Throughout this podcast, I was unable to access my phone or check my knowledge against any other sources, and I made about 7 mistakes. Feel free to add into the comments what's missing or needs correcting. And don't forget to hit the likety like button and subscribe for more videos. Enjoy!
What about, okay, so here's a cool one. I mean, this is relatively recent for you, but Cirque du Soleil, right? And that's, I've been to one show many, many years ago. That strikes me as very light focused, like light intensive, that kind of production.
It is.
Like there's just lights going on all over the place.
There are, because you have a 360 degree area. You have the audience that needs like some backlighting so that they can see if they have to get up and go to use the restroom or okay. when they're getting in and out of the theater. You need general audience lighting. During the show, you need the, after the show, when lights come up, they need to be able to see. You have lights on stage that need to either be pointed down at the stage or people who are flying through the air. And
right.
you need lights to follow those people.
Jesus, right.
There are some automated systems with lighting that allow you to track those people in three-dimensional space. And then you can just have like a laser pointer without the laser just... going like this, and then the light you're controlling that's like 50 meters away will do the work that you're actually telling it to do. And you can connect that light, you can add different things like color changing and like some effect cutouts. They're called, in here, they're called gobos. And like to the light, you can connect that light to the lighting computer. So the lighting board operator can actually just activate that light and have it do all of the things that it needs to do aside from like pan and tilt, so that like there's one guy, it's called Black, one of them is called Black Tracks. There's two major ones. I'm forgetting of the second one though. So let's just say Black Tracks. It's basically you have a laser pointer without the laser, but it's like you focus in on the subject as it's moving and that light just moves while the lighting board operator can program the lighting show. The show to actually just have the light do like changing colors or change effects while you're controlling the pan and tilt because the actor might be in a different spot.
I mean, and if it wasn't for some of the stunts, wouldn't be able to, like, you wouldn't be able to appreciate it if it wasn't for a light being a spotlight on wherever, some dude that's flying through the air.
True.
Right.
But for the issue with circus, any circus is that you have, it's a tent poles into a ground with a big tent.
Yeah.
So when you have a trapeze artist swinging from that, you have the masts are moving. Okay. The tent poles themselves are moving. And if you attach like a black track light to that, the light is physically moving a little left, a little right, a little up, a little down.
Okay.
Excuse me. As a trapeze artist is being caught or thrown into the air. So you can't actually use black tracks on a show like a circus. It's more of like an arena type thing where the structure is going to be not moving.
Mm-hmm.
So in a circus environment, you still have traditional handheld up, but you still have people sitting in a seat up in the tower, like focusing the lights where they need to go.
Really?
Yes.
No one's come up with an easier system. By the way, I thought Cirque du Soleil, they play in like standard arenas and stadiums.
Ah, they do. So for those, I don't know I've never been on one of those shows.
Okay.
For the arena shows. So they might use it there. I just know that for a touring show so this table's connected to the floor.
Yeah.
I am needing to move left and right. As I move left and right, this table moves left and right while I'm holding on to it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So imagine having something over there trying to focus on me while I'm moving and the table's moving.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. So for when you are a touring show in a tent, a tent pole, the big top, it makes it hard to do that because the structure that you need to attach the lights to is also moving,
right.
So it's like, how do you compensate for that when the movement is always going to be different?
Right. So you got some dude in some tower, moving the light
mm-hmm.
with the flying people.
Yes. They even, the one of the circuses that travels here, the Israeli circus, I've been to it, and they use traditional spotlights too.
Yeah.
They're also much cheaper. Like black tracks is not cheap.
Wait, is that you? Are you the person in the tower with the spotlight?
I did that a few times, but I've
How was that?
This was for like television though. So I was just like listening on comms and being told this, that. One of them was a live event where I wasn't prepped and had no rehearsal. They were just like, hey, a spotlight operator guy didn't show up. Hop on. And so I'm listening in Hebrew, having the show caller say, this is coming up, this is coming up next. And I have to think about how I can, I'm like 55 meters away from the stage. How do you actually get the light to be ready to go up and in position when they say go up? And one of the tricks I use is that I will dim the spotlight almost to where it's off, but to where I know I can see like just the outline of where that light is, but it's not enough to where it's like the spotlight is on and the audience knows it.
Mm.
And I can figure out where I will need to, who I might need to be following at that time. And after 10, 20 minutes, you just get into a rhythm of like figuring out what the show caller will need, where people are going on and off stage.
Yeah.
Is there a podium? You just get into the rhythm after a while because everything's just different.
It sounds like all these things are super, super complicated to pull off. TV shows, circus, movies. Is one more difficult than the other?
I wouldn't say one's more difficult than the other. I just think they're all difficult in their own way.
Okay.
Depending on what you want to do and what environment you're working in and who you have with you. I think that the people around you will make the world of difference, especially if it's going to be a hard day. Same thing, different day. Like the thing you do on a small show, the same you do on a big show. It's just more of it. And the reason I have the diversity from these different environments was because I needed to make a paycheck. It wasn't because I was like, oh, I liked theater and I was like, let's see if I can go do theater and like this or that. It's more of the fact that I needed a paycheck so that I really wanted to go and, you know, when TV season was done shooting,
yeah,
I needed to find more work.
Right.
So I would try and find a film. And if I couldn't get onto film, I would do live events in the summer. So it more and festivals. So it just became like this ebb and flow of like, all right, I'm going to go work with this crew so I can make money for this month. I'm going to go to that crew so I can make money for that month.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's really what it was born out of.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to have the perspective of seeing, okay, well, these are cables. That's a light. It's a lighting board. All right, well, this is, doesn't matter, film, television, theater, whatever. Like, that lighting board needs to talk to that light. Like, why do we have to make it complicated if we don't have to make it complicated to get a cable over there?
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I would say is that does throw me for a loop is virtual production environments where you have, you ever seen these?
No.
Okay, so it'll take, if you, for instance, Aerie sound stages, they have one in Berlin and they have one in the UK.
Or what? Aerie?
Aerie. A-R-R-I. Aerie is one of the, is at the forefront of film technology.
Okay.
Like, you expect them to be coming up with new stuff that, like, progresses technology in the film industry, like, regularly. They did it with their going from film to digital, and they've done it with their lights going from traditional sources to LEDs. They were the first company to really have to fully light a feature film with their, I want to say, L7s. Man, I hope my data is right on this. And then there was they have now virtual production studios. You know The Mandalorian?
What do you call it? Back to the Future?
No, The Mandalorian is the new one of the Star Wars spinoffs.
Okay.
So the way that it's shot is, think about your television has individual pixels, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the closer those things get together, the higher the resolution over. So, like, let's say you want to fill a wall of these. You can't just use the same density of pixels that you would for your home television.
Yeah.
Because then you'll just see, like, big gaps in between the pixels.
Okay.
So that spacing is called P spacing. I'm summarizing this. So the better your P spacing is, the higher the pixel density, and the higher the, depending on how wide or tall you want the whole wall or screen to be, that's your resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have software that can see, oh, okay, the wall is this big with this many pixels, and you can put an image on there.
Okay.
Like you at...
So that's what that number is, if it's like 4,200 by whatever that random mass number, 12,000 or 1,258 or something like that.
Yeah, basically.
It's so many pixels by so many pixels.
Yeah, right, like 1920 by 1080 is standard 1080p. Yeah,
right, okay.
So 1920 wide by 1080 up and down.
Okay.
And what they started doing with one of the big productions recently that in the past few years that got this technology like noticed was two things. It was the Unreal Engine and it was Aerie's Virtual Production Studios. So what you can do is create stuff. You know Unreal?
No.
Unreal is a video game.
Okay.
And their engine, which is like, you know, this is how you build something in our video game world. It's like, they call it a video game engine.
Okay.
So you can build stuff in Unreal in a 3D environment and project it instantaneously onto these displays in front of you. And when you put a camera in front of that person who's standing in front of these displays, you can pan, zoom, tilt, and you can also change the environment as it goes, as the camera tilts, as the camera pans right or left, or tilts up and down. You can kind of have some of those 3D environments like change in a certain way so that you can film all in one location. Mm. You don't have to go to a desert and the top of a mountain to film these two different scenes in a movie. You could do it in one space in London or Germany, and you would have a whole production facility of some of the best lights, cameras, and sound that you could actually do.
Holy like, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Aerie makes some of the top of the top. But in terms of just lighting...
Wait, so why isn't this the industry standard?
It's expensive.
Okay.
It is an expensive
But more
technology.
Expensive than flying a bunch of actors and crew and this and that to the top of a mountain or to a desert or whatever it may be?
It's, from what I've been told, depending on what you're doing, it's breaking even. But it... From a you look at this from the production from a producer's perspective.
Yeah,
a producer is like, how do I make the day easier? How can I make this a better environment? How, like, the producer at the highest level, looking down on stuff. If you could have your production in one spot,
yeah,
catering in one spot,
mm-hmm.
good air, not too hot, not too cold, no cables on the floor in Aries. London Uxbridge location at their virtual studio, there are no cables on the floor.
Mm.
Yeah. It's a great environment to shoot something if you could do it. And when you have a production budget of millions of dollars, you know, you could probably fit your shooting schedule into just that environment.
Do a lot of big budget movies, do they get made with this technology?
Mandalorian did. There's a lot more now. It used to be commercial, like mostly commercial. I'll get into that in a second. But to answer your question, like The Mandalorian was like one that really kind of piqued the public's interest when they started doing some behind the scenes stuff as to how that worked.
Mm-hmm.
Because before that, people didn't really know that much about this technology, but when you can throw that in people's faces, like, dude, look at this. This is the bleeding edge of current film technology.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it really piqued a lot of interest. To go off on a slight tangent to the, I forgot what I wanted to say.
Happens to me once an episode.
Yeah.
Why is it so expensive?
Expense. Electricity, the amount of people that you need who have expertise to do this, the amount of, like, so in London, it's a 270 degree field of just LED pixels. Those take, first off, you need not just a lot of pixels, you need quality pixels. So for instance, one time I rented lights for theater for a show that I was doing. And the lights didn't turn on until I faded them up to 40%. You know, some lights you can dim all the way, like even on the wall, like these lights, I could hit the off switch and they slowly dim down.
Okay.
These lights wouldn't turn on until I turned it up to 40%. So they wouldn't fade on. They would just be on.
Okay.
And they had a very bad green shift to them. So like people's skin looked greenish because they were poor quality LEDs.
Okay.
So when you translate something like that to film, when you're shooting poor quality lights, that goes against the intent of what it is you're trying to shoot, you're going to have a real bad day with the producer, the executive producer who's funding this thing going, why does this look horrible?
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't it look like what you proposed?
Mm-hmm.
So in this 270 degree field, also there's a roof of LEDs as well. And it's all, and the roof can be separated into four different sections. This is Aries specific London, Uxbridge location.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a huge arrays of LED pixels that need to be insanely accurate with their color. They need to be relatively fast in their response time. And you need to have enough of them in terms of longevity where you can't get, like, it's called binning. The way you choose LEDs, you could have, like, long-lasting, good color. So the higher it is on both of those, both on that graph, as that goes up to the right, like, really long-lasting, high color, it's more expensive.
Mm.
So if you want high-quality, long-lasting, low-maintenance, you know, quick response LEDs, you're paying a premium.
And this isn't, I'm assuming this isn't something I could just buy at a store with that sells lamps or something.
You can. No. You basically think about it like a TV.
Yeah.
How about this monitor right over here? Mm-hmm. So this display, I can tell you for sure that display is not color accurate. it makes grays and white look almost the same depending on the level of gray that you have.
Right.
When I was editing off of it one time, I got really freaked out because I thought an entire logo of ours that we were adding onto the footage wasn't there. I thought I totally missed it. And then I dragged it back over to my laptop because I had that as an external display.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my goodness, phew. And that's how I learned that that display is just very inaccurate in color.
Mm.
So if you were to get like a lot of these, do you see how thick the edges are too?
Okay.
So if you were to put a bunch of those in a room, you're going to see a bunch of, imagine like on a Google Sheet where you have just, you know, lines separating each cell on a Google Sheet.
Yeah.
You'll notice that when you print it.
Right.
So if you're watching on a movie that has of with screens that have those big fat lines in between them, it's going to take you out. You're going to be like, oh, I'm looking at monitors.
Mm.
So how do you not just get all those pixels together, but how do you get them so close, one panel at a time, so close you can't tell where they start and end?
Okay.
And right. that's a rigging department situation.
Right. Which is essentially how we view things, right?
Yeah.
Like it all just sort of blends in, like your skin, your hair. I can't exactly tell when one ends and when one begins, right?
Right.
That's interesting. So I didn't realize it was that difficult or expensive, at least, to reproduce that. On a film set.
Well, that's why you had the original like virtual set production facilities like this. There's some in New York, Germany, London, and around the world. The reason that they target commercials, like when you want to shoot BMW, when BMW wants to shoot a commercial, you know, they've got money to shoot a commercial. Like they are spending millions of dollars on marketing. There are like some companies, the food companies, that will spend $1 million to $2 million just on developing the concept for shooting their commercial.
Technology is taking content creation into really uncharted territories. Aside from the aspects I discussed in this episode, AI solutions for content are also making their way into our toolkits, and in some cases might actually replace some of what we as creatives do. For now, though, as creatives, the equipment we have at our fingertips is almost limitless. If we can imagine it, someone out in the world understands how to help us bring that vision to life. Depending on what medium you are creating in and what medium your audience is viewing your content, the technological needs will shift from production to production. However, what won't change is the need for you to keep your audiences engaged in reinventing the wheel to keep people coming back and back and back for more. Let me know down below in the comments what technology you work with on production and what technology you'd like to see in the future. Thanks again for joining me on this mini-series about lighting and camera. I hope that these episodes have had an impact on you. And don't forget to like, and subscribe. Come on, folks, hit that like button. I'll see you in the next episode. Ciao.